Hello, and welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Today's conversation poses the question, what should we expect from the evolution of genetics and nutrition? Our special guest is Dr. John Patience of Iowa State University, along with Dr. William Herring, PIC's Director of Global Development, and Dr. Weasley Orlando, PIC's Global Nutrition Director.
Hi, Dad. Good morning. Weasley Orlando, I'm Global Nutrition Director in PIC.
William Herring, responsible for the Global Genetic Improvement Program for PIC.
And I'm John Patience. I'm a professor of applied swine nutrition at Iowa State University.
I've been looking forward to this conversation just based on how the industry has changed, all the management concepts, all the feeding precepts, all those things, and it's been driven by genetics. How has genetic improvement, how has that changed our pig?
You know, and I'm going to use kind of a 6 year ago time benchmark, if you will. I really started at PIC around that time, coming up on 7 years ago, but we made here within really across all the genetic lines a number of changes right around 2013. One, we made the conscious decision that based on the direction that our customers were headed to alter what I'd call the breeding objective for all of our lines. And really all that means is we decided to re-emphasize different traits and different levels of magnitude. So one of the things that we did at that point, if you look back prior to 2013, really trends for growth potential, average daily gain, whatever, however you want to describe it, were, you know, somewhat flat, I would argue. The pig had been selected for really more along the lines of lean efficiency, which was, you know, appropriate for that window of time within the industry. But, you know, looking forward, we collectively decided that we really needed to put a lot more emphasis on growth potential. You know, feed efficiency and those things still critically important by that, but that was going to be driven by, you know, the ability to for increase average daily gain. So that was one of the things that we did. We did a number of other things, but you know, pertinent to this conversation, I think that's really relevant. We not only did it in the terminal products, you know, the 337, the Duroc 800, the 327, but we also did it in the maternal lines. So if you were to look today, like at the Canberra relative to six years ago, the trend, if we were to draw a line, you would see a very steep slope for average daily gain in those lines. And so I think that has implications for everything else from the standpoint of how we feed and manage the pig. I think to be competitive, we needed to make that change. The other thing that we did during that time period as well, when we made that change on selection emphasis, is we implemented in a very broad way, we added in genomic selection as a very key part of what we did in our indexing process. And that just made us more accurate in the selection process. But it also, by being more accurate, it accelerates that genetic gain. So, you know, we changed the emphasis in terms of the direction of growth potential in the pig, but at the same time, we moved that slope faster. So, and Weasley and I have talked about this quite a bit, that, you know, when you do those things, you make a commercial pig that has greater growth potential from a closeout perspective, that you also have a sow that now is not only more productive and, you know, from a growth potential, but also she's moving forward at an increased trend of adding one PSY basically per year in her genetic potential. I mean, that's a bigger engine that needs more fuel. And so the need that those animals have should be expected to increase from a nutritional perspective. So genetics has changed quite a bit. I think the pigs changed. I think the sows changed and will continue to.
Dr. Patience, in your experience, how has this evolution in the genetic base for the animal, how has that changed our nutritional profiling? We're not using the same charts we used a decade ago. Is that correct?
To some extent, that is absolutely correct. And to some extent, it's surprising that it hasn't changed that much. I think one of the things that PIC has done very, very well in parallel with genetic improvement have helped to define what is the optimum feeding program for their pig. And I think that's really, really important because you can't have success in genetic improvement without nutrition, and you can't have success with nutrition unless you're feeding that specific pig and know what that pig's nutritional requirements are. So there's a lot of variables in there, Ned, that really impact how the nutritionist looks at feeding this. Can we call it the next generation pig or the evolving pig? I think the big one is the improvements in sow productivity, the so-called hyperprolific sow, where we're now weaning 11, 12, or more pigs per litter, and we really need to be able to provide nutrients and especially energy to that sow so that she not only weans as heavy a offspring as possible, but she's also prepared for her next reproductive cycle. So that has been, I think, the biggest change in terms of feeding the market animal. From a nutritional point of view, we look at it that there's a lot of variability out there amongst farms. And one of the biggest variables is feed intake, and another variable is health status. Ideally, what we want to do is be able to feed a specific pig of a specific genetic line according to how that pig is performing in the field. What is its intake? Because that affects how we formulate the diet, and what is the health status. And that's one of the areas of nutrition that's starting to move ahead. Probably took us too long to do it, but that is, how does the requirement for energy and nutrients, for example, amino acids, change if the animal is exposed to PRRS or mycoplasma or swine dysentery or any of those diseases? How is that different from feeding a pig that is not exposed to those animals? So the ability to feed according to what that pig is capable of doing commercially is one of the changes, and the other is feeding that hyperprolific sow, which is so different from the sows we were feeding before. And quite frankly, we need a lot more information. I was just at a meeting earlier this week, and we were reflecting on the fact that a lot of the data we have on how to feed sows came from data where we were weaning 9 and 10 pigs per litter, or even less. And we're now trying to extrapolate those data to feeding the modern sow. And I think we're obviously doing an okay job because we have herds doing over 30 pigs per sow per year. But I think we would feel more comfortable if we had some more modern data to work with.
Weasley, how has this information impacted your conversations with customers?
So basically, since I started almost 5 years ago in PIC, and I used to be PIC customer for many years, my biggest concern with genetic company, and William, that does not take me wrong on this, but it's understanding what happened with genetic. It's getting this information previous as possible to make the best decision as nutritionist. So nowadays, my team and myself, for sure, our plan is doing exactly this. Understand what genetic is doing, getting trials and making working close as possible with universities and partnership with universities like Dr. Patients represent, and actually understand about the requirement and translate this information for our customers. I would say, if I compare 5 years ago, I remember when I see the first time here the requirement, I say, okay, I saw exactly some data that William showed in terms of genetic improvement that day we are in 15, but it's a big change at that time. I say, okay, based on this change, I don't believe the requirement for those pigs today should be the same from 5 years ago. Then we start to running trials, we start to collect data from the field, and we, in 2016, released the update in our nutrient profile, nutrient specification, and there's a huge change. And not only for a hire, but we understood, for example, in sales, that our sales are much more efficient today than the past. I mean, using probably less feed, not probably, for sure, less feed. So this is just one example for you. Is it really a kind of combination between what genetic is doing and developing and nutrition evolution to update this requirement?
Weasley, how many of, if you looked across the customer base, because those were some significant changes that your team recommended, really around the growing pig as much as anything. How much uptake would you say has that had?
You know, let's say in that time, I mean, probably 4 years ago, some customers are usually working with above the requirement. Above than that requirement before, I mean, 2016. So,
and was that based on data, or is that based on feel?
I would say that's a couple ones based on feeling, but most of our, I mean, some great companies here in North America, they have capabilities running trials and did their own trials to understand about this requirement. And this is our deal today. It's trying to anticipate in the future, right? Because in that time, probably you are delayed. We have to say, yeah, maybe we are delayed that time. And we have to, I don't know if Dr. Patience and William will agree with me, but it's almost impossible to nutrition and genetic work in the same time. I mean, same time means get the requirement up to this animal's ready, because genetics always a step up. I mean, I said almost because we have a plan and probably have time in discussion today to say that we probably will find ways to anticipating these requirements for the future genetics.
So those that implemented your recommended changes in from a nutrition perspective, are there one or two observations that they saw that either it worked as expected or it didn't? Just feedback on those changes. Any big one-offs?
Let's talk about first about the feeding cells, right? Just if we compare feeding a cambrial sow in 2015 and feeding the same cambrial sow today, I mean, same cambrial, but not the same animals, right? I would say that we can easy spend less than 200 pounds per sow per year. Easy, less than 200 pounds per sow per year, more efficient, and producing, as you know, much more piglets. It means, I don't believe it's only because nutrition got this evolution. I believe that genetic that got this evolution. And we are realizing this in some, I mean, not in one or two customers, in a lot of customers, since we start to get this update in nutrition for sows. And also for growing to finish, the same. We released in 2016 our new lysine requirement, also economic tools. And we know that in terms of biological response, they respond quite well, you know, quite well. And of course, we provide information in economic because not necessarily in all countries or all places they have the same requirement in terms of economic standpoints.
Dr. Patience, William's question, let's cast that net a little wider. The industry at large, are they aware of this change? And obviously PIC leading the way, and yet the industry as a whole moving in this direction, are they accepting of this new knowledge?
Yes, I think they are. And one of the changes that's gone on in our industry in the last 15 years or so would be that the producers that people from PIC, for example, will be speaking to will have their own nutritionists trained at the PhD level now. It may have multiple nutritionists, and so they can talk at a technical level and be talking about the nitty-gritty of what's different about the pig today, what's different about the nutrient requirements today as compared to 10 years ago. So that's number one. And number two is the record keeping that we see has evolved and is getting better. Different organizations have different priorities, right? Some will place a higher priority on growth rate because they want to maximize the weight of the market hog within a specific amount of time because their grow out facilities are typically time limited. But there will be other producers who will focus a bit more on return over feed costs. So there's that balance between maximizing growth rate and return over feed costs. The point is they have the records. So the combination of having very well-trained people and having very good records really makes it much easier. So when I'm talking to producers, we're moving, you know, down the path, so to speak, in terms of nutrition, more into the fine-tuning stage. So I would agree with everything that you usually said, you know, to put it in a maybe a different focus. To me, the difference is, or how we feed the pig is influenced by, number one, what is the maintenance requirement of that pig? And number two, what is the requirement for growth? Because that's fundamentally what defines the nutrient requirements for that pig. And how has that changed over time? We don't think maintenance requirements have changed, but we do know that growth rates have improved, protein deposition rates have improved, so that's where we've had to make adjustments. It's similar in feeding the sow, but feeding that growing pig, we expect those pigs to grow faster than they did before, and indeed, in the numbers that we see in grow finish or wean to finish, were, I don't know if you'd say unimagined 10 or 15 years ago, but what is accepted today as a norm was certainly not the norm 10 years ago.
I have two questions out of that statement. First one, for the guys here, do you concur with Dr. Patient's comments regarding maintenance?
Yeah. Yep.
That's good. All right. Second one is records. I love your comment about records, the availability of additional information. What's the important record that you've come to rely on in the last 5 years that wasn't available before for each of you?
Weasley.
Let's talk about, for example, birth weight, right? Birth weight. When I first day in PAC, I saw one graphic that one chart actually Willen showed me, where the changes in PSY and changes in birth weight. And that day I say, Willen, I mean, this is amazing because it's clear you guys did an excellent job in more piglets. And the birth weight increased, but increased in that time, right? Because change was going down for a couple of years, many years, 10 years. And then, based on what Willen and Willen can explain better what his team did. But as a nutritionist, on my first day, I said, wow, it's amazing because you guys are reporting that moving down, but you guys are improving by genetic. And as nutritionists, and I don't know if John will agree with me, but actually as nutritionists, everybody trying to fix this problem by nutrition and expanding more and spending time, using more feed, using more nutrients. And what do we discover with the trials that we invest in 2 years after that day? That maybe the correlation is negative. I mean, as soon as you have more feed, we have a probably zero impact or almost zero, just until the data that we have today. By nutrition, we can improve almost nothing in birth weight. By genetic, it's a lot. But that's the wrong way that nutritionists are doing that time. So this is one probably my best example.
No, Weasley's, that is probably the, using your time window of, you know, 5-6 years ago, that is one for us in the genetic improvement piece that we also implemented at that same time as we put more emphasis on growth. We had been, from a research perspective, collecting individual birth weights on pigs in our nucleus sites and for a few years with the full intention of trying to understand could we raise weight at birth on individual pigs, simply because we knew, and there's been internal research to PIC and peer-reviewed, publicly reviewed research that clearly shows an unintended consequence of sows having larger litters, i.e. more piglets, on average the weight of those pigs at birth goes down. So our goal there was to understand, is there genetic variation there that we can try and control, and while increasing the number of piglets born and weaned, at the same time increasing birth weight? Because all of the field trials clearly show that a heavier pig at birth, everything is positively associated with that. It's a higher probability of being a full value pig. They grow faster. Everything associated therewith is positive. So we put that in place, and Weasley's right. Not only the genetic trends show that that's increasing over the last half dozen years with bigger litters, it's a big contributing factor to the improvement of PSY as well. So, you know, that's been really a nice story that's come along. And I mean, pre-weaning livability in the pigs is improved at the same time. So I would agree with Weasley 100% on that one.
And that's a great comment that nutritionists were trying to overcome the problem caused by lower birth weight. Dr. Patience, on your end, what is that new metric that you have come to rely on that didn't used to be available?
First off, just to go back to the previous comments, I would agree with that 100%. I think that was critical, if not essential, to achieve progress in that area. The improvement in litter size was profound and has really helped our industry in terms of competitiveness. But it was also critical because producers really needed some assistance in improving livability and viability and a higher proportion of full value pigs at the time of market. So improvement in birth weight was, I think that's one of the great achievements of the past decade. I really do. I don't think we can overstate it.
Joining us on The Squeal today were special guests Dr. John Patience of Iowa State University and Dr. Weasley Orlando, PIC's Global Nutrition Director, along with Dr. William Herring, PIC's Director of Global Development. This conversation will continue, and you're welcome to share it widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.